People Who Cannot Die. Aretha Franklin passes away this morning. We also remember Vazgen I of blessed memory and how this unorthodox clergyman really moved the world. This is Father Vazgen. I'm a priest of the Armenian Church, connecting the dots and looking at life through the most ancient of all Christian traditions, namely Armenian Orthodoxy. This is episode 532 of The Next Step, and we invite you to take it with us right now.
Hi, this is Susie from In His Shoes Ministries. What you're about to listen to is an episode of The Next Step with Father Vazgen. Here, Father Vazgen provides a very distinctive and consistent voice for Armenian Orthodoxy, based on the solid principles of love, faith, and hope as expressed by our Lord Jesus Christ. We produce these shows every week for a vast audience, which includes those who are searching for practical and deeper applications of faith, to disenfranchise members of the church community, and of course the neophyte, those who are discovering truths in ancient orthodoxy. So we invite you to turn up the volume and get ready to take the next step.
Say a little prayer for you, Aretha Franklin. You understand what prayer's about, right? Say a prayer for who? There's a voice. There's a voice that will never be forgotten. Aretha Franklin passed away early this morning. And I've been listening to her music all day today, just reconnecting to that voice, to the music. Yeah, we'll share a little bit more in a little bit with our listeners. But I heard yesterday on the news that she was taken in to a hospital, was hospitalized. I didn't realize the end was this quickly, but apparently pancreatic cancer got her, age 76. This is from Rolling Stones, and I picked Rolling Stones as the source of this news because, you know, Rolling Stone had... the magazine had named her as the greatest singer of all time. And when you think about the number of people that she has influenced, the people that she has touched, the people who have become musicians, Paul McCartney writes, "Let's all take a moment to give thanks for the beautiful life of Aretha Franklin, the queen of our souls, who inspired us all for many, many years. She will be missed, but the memory of her greatest as a musician and a fine human being will live with us forever." Love, Paul. I got to tell you, I've been, it's just been a weird day today. We're waking up to this news. And her voice cannot be silenced. That's the beauty of music. I want to play for you this little bit that Her brother talks about music, Cecil Franklin, minister, and actually Aretha Franklin introduces him. Let's listen to this part, okay?
It makes me very happy tonight that my family is here singing and praying with me. And at this time, I would like to introduce to you my brother, Reverend Cecil Franklin.
It is my task to have a few comments. And I thought about a passage of scripture, the gospel according to St. Mark, 16th chapter and the 15th verse, where we are challenged to go ye into all the world and preach my gospel unto every creature. Go ye into all the world and preach my gospel unto every creature. You know, there is a unique advantage in preaching the gospel using the vehicle of song. For songs have the advantage of being packaged and wrapped in universal appeal. Songs are not limited by natural or human boundaries. The gospel through song is universally comfortable, for it is not hindered by local, state, or national boundaries. Not hindered by racial, economic, political, or religious preferences. Songs are clothed with the ability or capacity to successfully and confidently meet the challenge of the Great Commission. Go ye into all the world and preach my gospel unto every creature. Songs are in a position to confidently answer that challenge. And therefore the gospel through song accepts the challenge and responds joyfully, praising the name of Jesus. And therefore we sing, oh how I love Jesus. Oh how I love Jesus. Oh how I love Jesus.
The gospel through song because accepts the challenge and responds joyfully, praising the name of Jesus. Wild, isn't it? I mean, you know what? You bring it down to a bottom line. What's the bottom line? I'm going to share with you during the second portion of today's show some bottom line stuff that comes from a source that you may not expect. Old school. From His Holiness Vazgen the First. Yeah, this Saturday happens to be the anniversary of his passing. Let's see, 1994, it'll be 24 years ago. A giant in the church. Truly a giant. But how about American press? Western press looking at this giant. I'm going to share with you some stuff that you have not heard before. Impossible that you've heard it. Unless you were sitting around in 1960 reading some newspapers. But you don't need to do that. You've got me, okay? I'm going to do that for you, coming up in the second portion. But today we're reflecting on a life, Aretha Franklin, her music, and I'll share with you a beautiful song that I struggled to find the song that I wanted to share with you today. But coming up on today's song, I'm going to share with you a song called Walk in the Light by Aretha Franklin. And you know, the beauty of Aretha Franklin is, like all good singers, they start off in church. They start off in praise worship. But the beauty of Aretha Franklin is the way she kept it. She kept it going. Let's see, from Rolling Stone, it says, it was a small moment that would reverberate for decades. On January 24th, 1967, Aretha Franklin was struggling to record I Never Loved a Man the Way I Loved You. Her first project for Atlantic after several years recording more conventional material for Columbia. As Franklin would recall, something with the studio musicians wasn't clicking until someone said, Aretha, why don't you sit down and play? Taking a seat at the piano, Franklin quickly cut the smoldering track that would become her first number one R&B hit. It just happened, she said. We arrived very quickly. And it never stopped. For more than five decades, Franklin was a singular presence in pop music. A symbol of strength, women's liberation, and the civil rights movement. Franklin, one of the greatest singers of all time, died Thursday of pancreatic cancer, according to her publicist, Gwendolyn Quinn. It is with deep and profound sadness that we announce the passing of Aretha Louise Franklin, the Queen of Soul, Quinn said in a statement. Franklin passed away on Thursday morning, August 16, at her home in Detroit, Michigan, surrounded by family and loved ones, in one of the darkest moments of our lives. We are not able to find the appropriate words to express the pain in our hearts. We have lost the matriarch and rock of our family, the love she had for her children, grandchildren, nieces, nephews, and cousins needs no bounds. We have been deeply touched by the incredible outpouring of love and support we have received from close friends, supporters, and fans all over the world. Thank you for your compassion and prayers, Quinn said, and she continues. And I'll put a link on today's show notes. And so give me a few minutes to share with you some of my feelings, because here was a woman, I remember at age 12, you know, going out and getting these records. I would sometimes, and for some reason, the local library would have these records. They wouldn't have too many pop singers. They wouldn't have too many. But the songs that they had of Aretha Franklin were spiritual, were gospels. One of the first songs that I've ever turned on to was Aretha Franklin doing Spirit in the Dark. Spirit in the Dark, wow. It was spiritual. It was emotional. And, you know, these songs, when she sang, it touches the inside. It touches you in the inside. It touches your heart. You understand what it means to touch the inside of your soul. Because you can't explain it. It's not a physical contact. It's truly a spiritual contact. Aretha Franklin. Oh, yeah, we've heard her do Respect. R-E-S-P-E-C-T. We'd love it. Remember, you'd wait for that part in the song to come, okay? You knew that it was coming, and then all of a sudden, R-E-S-P-E-C-T. Yeah, exactly. You turned on for it. You waited for it. Now, does this voice die at this point? This is where I come in, and I think this is really important. Look at the beauty and wonders of modern technology, that we are able to preserve this voice so that today we can listen to it. Now, several years ago, actually during my time in Silicon Valley, a book came out called The Physics of Immortality. And really, if you think about it, as technology advances, immortality becomes a reality on this physical plane. Let me repeat that, okay? Immortality becomes a reality on this physical plane. For instance, right now, Aretha Franklin is gone, but the voice is not. We get to hear her. And yes, thank you to technology. We have now recordings of her preserved. And so you can pop her up anytime you want. You can listen to her. As far as her character, her person, what they talked about today, this wonderful mother, grandmother, yeah, those things, unfortunately, she's not with us. And so it behooves those who she's touched to keep her going by the memories that they have, sharing those memories, sharing those experiences. But someone like this cannot die. I'm always reminded of the greats when I talk about this, about immortality. Think about a Beethoven, Bach, Mozart. Can Beethoven ever die? Really, can he ever die? You listen to his concerto, you listen to one of his symphonies, you listen to someone playing on the violin, a Beethoven piece, on the piano. He lives. Aretha Franklin, can she ever die? As long as you listen to her, you bring up one of her soulful songs, she lives. She touches you. And that's the beauty. That's the wonder of art. That's the beauty of music. As Reverend Cecil Franklin said a few minutes ago, you know, that's the wonder. It's engaging that gospel. Go out there and get the gospel message out to the world. And music has a unique way of doing that. Why do you think from day one, since we started The Next Step, every day that we have had a podcast, I make time. Even if when we don't have time, I make time to put a song in there. We call it a song of the week, song of the day, whatever it may be. Because in these different expressions, we have a way of touching one another. Now you come to Armenian Orthodoxy or Orthodoxy in general. Have you ever thought why we chant the entire liturgy? Why we chant our services? It's the magic of music. It's the magic of melodies. When a Buddhist stands in meditation, and they refer to that meditative tone as the sound of the universe, think about it. What are they talking about? Talking about a tone. They're talking about the sound. Some of our greatest memories come from sounds. They come from, I think our olfactory senses are the most powerful. In fact, I had just an interesting experience last week while we were out in Idaho. We picked up some wildflower oil. Wow. And the only reason why I picked it up is because when I smelled it, it took me back someplace. I don't know where it took me. In fact, I've been putting it on and just trying to figure out where it takes you. But that's the power of immortality, right? When you listen to a song like this, it's immortal. It takes you someplace. It touches, it connects with you. Now think about that in terms of human relationships. Each of us, whether it's our vocal cords going and singing, whether it's a unique touch, a smell, a unique sound, or a sight, each of us can bring our participation to touching this life in a unique way. This is what our biggest objection to war, to violence has to be. Because violence ends the ability to touch. Violence prevents you from living, prevents you from enjoying, prevents you from connecting with that immortality. That immortality is made available. It's made available through our record keeping. Yeah. Yeah. The old libraries of old time, right? This is why the greatest tragedies that happen is when libraries are destroyed, right? And now that we've arrived at a place where our technology maybe cannot be destroyed, I don't want to bet on it, but maybe cannot be destroyed. In other words, redundancy. We are taking volumes and mass amounts of information and redundantly copying it and storing it on places in the cloud, on hard drives, on little thumb drives here and there. These are bits and pieces of people. Whereas books in the past contained the thought process of an individual. Just as I said a few minutes ago, as Beethoven, could Beethoven ever die? Could Plato ever die? Can Aristotle ever die? These thoughts have come through the centuries to us via libraries, via books. And with technology in the last 200 years, say with the advent of photography, with music, the ability to preserve sound, and later moving pictures, and now the ability to have videos, and these videos being stored on clouds and on servers in the North Pole. Think about that. Each one of these are just bits and pieces of ourselves. And so, yes, Aretha Franklin cannot die. We have her voice. And every time she sings, she speaks to us. But what I'm challenging you to do is push yourself to the next level, to start talking about immortality as something that is not pie in the sky, but attainable right now. And yes, we talk about in crude forms, about the technology, about thumb drives, about cloud storage. This is all today. Think about in 10 years, in 15 years. 15 years ago, you didn't even have smartphones, okay? No such thing. 11 years ago, 12 years ago, right? 2007. I mean, nobody even thought that you'd be carrying around a small little phone inside your pocket, and on that phone would be stored this immortality. Because yes, I could from my little phone, I could bring up images, I could bring up motion, I could bring up sound of Aretha Franklin. And that technology gives us the ability, it's the groundwork. What I'm asking you now is to push yourself to think beyond that. Because obviously there are certain things that technology cannot do. They cannot bring her touch back. They cannot bring, it cannot bring her breath back. We talked about her being this mother, this grandmother. That part is gone, at least for right now, right? And now connect dots with what Jesus Christ was saying. Jesus Christ, who said, "He who believes in me, though he die, yet shall he live." What does that mean? What does that mean in the context of what we're talking about? You see, it's not all about something off in the distance. It's not some, and this is why I tell you, when Jesus Christ came, he says, the kingdom of heaven is at hand. It's not someplace in the future. It's right now. It's been enacted. It's in your presence. The fullness of life. And so when we have the passings of people like Aretha Franklin, giants in their own right, giants, truly giants, people who have touched us and still continue to touch us at a very, very primal level. These are only little sparks for us. They need to spark within us that dialogue, that discussion, that thought, that meditation about what Christ is offering us. And though many will argue that it's about, you know, some time to come after you close your eyes, Jesus is going to take care of you. And many will argue about a justice to come in the future and so on and so on. What I challenge you to do is think about the words that he said. The kingdom of heaven is right now. It has been enacted. It is within you and without you. And our ability to touch that, our ability to hit immortality right now. That's a challenge. I think it's the challenge that Christ puts us to. Not to believe in future events, but to believe in the here and now, right now, as an opportunity to touch and feel God's presence. Aretha Franklin did that for us. She started off in her musical career, so to speak. I guess it wasn't a career at that time. In the church, she sang gospel, and I'm going to share with you a song, Walk in the Light, Aretha Franklin, passed away today at age 76.
Jesus is the light of the world. Come on, choir. Walk in the light. It's a beautiful light. Come where the dewdrop, oh mercy, shine bright. Oh Lord, shine all around by day by night. Oh,
mercy shine bright. Come on,
Aretha Franklin. A little bit of gospel for you. Born in Memphis, March 25th, 1942, Franklin was groomed for gospel glory from her childhood. Her father was the renowned and popular Reverend C.L. Clarence LaVon Franklin, the man with a million-dollar voice. And she recorded her first album of gospel when she was 14 years old. Her mother, Barbara Siggers Franklin, was also a gospel singer. When young Franklin was two, she and her family moved to Detroit. It was there where Aretha was quickly steeped in church services. Her father was the star preacher of the New Bethel Baptist Church and music. Thanks to her father's success, household visitors included Ella Fitzgerald and Duke Ellington. How about that? I'll put a link to this story where you could read more about her, see some videos on her, and I'll put a link to this song. This is a collection of gospel songs that she did a few years ago. A voice that I said earlier will always remain with us, will always continue to touch us. Yeah, there is immortality. Yeah, there is life after death. And what she has as faith is between her and God. For us, thank God that we have these means to touch her, to touch her voice, and have her touch us in our lives. We talked about a giant, Aretha Franklin, with her voice, someone who will not die. Likewise, the next person we'll talk about is in the same category. Not in the entire world, probably very few people know him, but definitely within the Armenian world, he's known, and definitely within the Armenian church, he is known. I particularly know him because I bear his name. Talking, of course, about the Catholicos of all Armenians, Vazgen I, who was the Catholicos, the chief bishop of the Armenian Church from 1955 to 1994. Almost 40 years, one of the longest reigning Catholicoi of the Armenian Church. And while ecclesiastically he had his position, he was also a father. He was also the head of a nation. I want to say it that way. And this is not just my perception, but you got to remember the years that I cited, 1955 to 1994, most of those years, at least until 1991, were within the Soviet Union. 1991, the Soviet Union fell. But during those years, if you know anything about Soviet Union, if you know anything about Soviet communism, you know that it is an atheist regime. They don't believe in God. Not only that, they put down people who believe in God. And yet, in Armenia, in small little Armenia, the Armenian church had a life. Yeah, it may not be the end-all of all things, but it did have a life. I'll vouch for it. In 1977, I went there. Who would have ever thought? Communist country, you can go to a seminary. And the envelopes that would come to me would be written to the seminary of Holy Etchmiadzin. I would write letters and address them from the seminary of Holy Etchmiadzin. And we would sing praises of God inside Holy Etchmiadzin, inside the Soviet Union. How did that happen? Well, thanks to this man that we're talking about, Vazgen I, a Catholicos of a different nature. When you think about God picks the people for his church, every one according to their time and the way that they can function within that church. Certainly, Vazgen I was this unique leader of the Armenian church. In 1960, just 4 or 5 years after his consecration as the head of the Armenian church, he came out to America. He came out to both Americas, actually. He came out to North and South America, 1960 July. He arrived in Los Angeles July 1st. How do I know that? Well, my mom had documented it. 1960 was an unusual year for our family. My father had just graduated USC Pharmacy School and had not started to work yet. He had finished at Vailor's Pharmacy down on Hoover Street. Yeah. And yes, the same Hoover Street that USC is on, but a few miles away. So he had just graduated. My first sister was just born. She was a year and a half, 1960. This is July. She was a year and a half years old. And because of all the circumstances and no work, my dad and mom said, road trip. The Catholicos is coming to America. He's coming to Los Angeles, Fresno, and San Francisco. The extent of what we now call the Western Diocese was called the Armenian Church California Diocese. And so there we were, road trip. We got in a car and we followed the Catholicos. Now, I don't remember this. I got to be honest. I remember it because of the pictures. Probably my sister remembers it. She was younger than me, but she's got an incredible memory. But my mom documented it. And she put it in a scrapbook. Articles that appeared in newspapers, pictures that she had taken, that others had taken. She put it in a giant scrapbook. And she kept it. And through the years, I remember seeing this book, but the last 20 years, I don't know whatever happened to this book until maybe about a year ago. We were doing some cleaning up around the house and we found this book. And it was beautiful. And I started thumbing through it and the articles that came out, the stories that came out. And one of the things that really hit me was 1960, this is during the Cold War, but it's right after, or still, there's traces of McCarthyism, right? You know what McCarthyism was? If you don't, just briefly, basically, we had a senator here who, a bunch of, like, people who were anti-communist would label people as communists. And you had to defend yourself. In a country where you are innocent until proven guilty, for this period of time, this was the McCarthy era, you were guilty unless you could prove yourself innocent. You were guilty of the charge of having thoughts that would align you with the communist mentality. Have you ever been a member of the Communist Party? There's been movies made about it. There's been series, Blacklist. There's been all kinds of stuff made about this. But within the Armenian community, it was unique because we had the competition of another Catholicos. And that Catholicos had been taken over by the political party. And what happened is they started accusing anybody from Armenia coming here as being communist. Vazgen I was the Catholicos, 1955. For us living in the diaspora, there was no Armenia outside of that Armenian church. And so when the head of the Armenian church came to America, it was like the head of the Armenian nation coming here. And there were people who were trying to redwash him, trying to wash him as a communist. And this book, this scrapbook, shows just the opposite. This scrapbook is so beautiful because it shows what the American press was talking about during the time of the Catholicos' visit. And I'm going to share with you a couple of the excerpts in there, and I'm going to even do something even better for you, okay? Because you're a Next Step listener, all you need to do is write me at feedback@epostle.net, and I'm going to send you the scrapbook. It's a PDF file. You'll have to download it. No strings attached. No, you're not going to get just a bunch of wild email from me. Just no strings attached. All you need to do is ask for it. I'll be happy to send it to you, okay? Because tonight at the Western Diocese, we're going to be presenting this book for inclusion in the Western Diocese Museum. But as we do that, we're going to also make a presentation. And during that presentation, my mom is going to talk. God bless her. She is 85 years old. She still has her wits about her, and she's able to make this presentation. She's going to share her story with the people. But in the same vein, she also gets a little tired, let's say it that way. And so she's asked me to fill in after she speaks, and I'm just so pleased to be able to do it because we have these documents that are really speaking to me. They speak to me because they show what the Armenian Church was about at a time when not too many people knew about the Armenian Church. This is in the Fresno Bee. Now, Fresno is one of the first centers of Armenian life after post-genocide. Armenians came, and this is in the Central Valley of California. There are pictures of His Holiness. And along with those pictures, it has his quotes. It says, "This kind of schism should not have taken place. It is fundamental. We should be one church. We are the same people. We are the same nation. You see, political circumstances are temporary, but the church is eternal." This is a Catholicos who comes from the so-called Soviet Union. He's talking about nation. Whereas in the Soviet Union, they didn't want to talk about nation. It was just the Soviet, right? This is wild. This is wild that this book exists. Fresno B. Catholicos seeks to heal rift. Political circumstances are temporary, but the church is eternal. So declared Catholicos Vazgen I, the leader of 4 million Armenian apostolics, as he expressed a strong desire to see the reunification of the Armenian Apostolic Church. This is in the American press, and we have it documented now. Now, let me share you an excerpt from, this is from the San Francisco Chronicle, okay? San Francisco, big center. He says, "The present materialistic thinking and technical progress, which are dominant features of our modern civilization at the present time, and the result of the marvelous intellectual powers of man, cannot and will not be able to satisfy, in the last resort, the highest aspirations of man's soul." Whoa! An Armenian cleric! The Catholicos, the head priest, the head bishop of the Armenian Church. Yeah, I know. Our mouth waters when we hear the Pope say it. A Catholicos was saying it. 1960. "It is and should be the strongest wish of us all that the new humanity, with its soaring intellect, may be able to lift up the eyes of its heart and mind toward eternal truths, so that it may succeed in finding the meaning of life and live that life more meaningfully." The prelate also declared that the Armenian people, wherever they may be found in the world, while being faithful and loyal citizens of the countries where they live and following the leadership of their governments, are at the same time faithful children of the church. He praised the church in the United States and urged the faithful to maintain your reputation as good Armenian Christians and as good American citizens of this great Christian land. What? Wait. Haven't we heard that communists can't say this kind of stuff? Oh, the Catholicos was saying it. And guess what? Armenian politics had said that he can't say it. Why? To get us to believe that we have to change and we have to follow not a religious leader, but a political leader. This book is fantastic. One of the most beautiful stories in this is one that I've heard because I grew up during this time and I remember these stories. During this visit, 1960, the powers to be. You know who they are, right? Diocesan, parish level. The powers to be had now set up an opportunity for the Catholicos to celebrate the Divine Liturgy, the highest service of the Armenian Church. In the praise of God, the Divine Liturgy was to be celebrated where? It was to be celebrated in a place big enough to accommodate the people. 1987, I was in charge of that event. And we rented the Hollywood Bowl. I rented it from the county of Los Angeles. We rented the Hollywood Bowl, where His Holiness Vazgen I, the last pontifical visit he made to the United States, he celebrated the Divine Liturgy at the Hollywood Bowl. I was there. I remember it. I remember how meaningful it was. Outdoors, beautiful, on the holy table, set up in the Hollywood Bowl. This is 1960 now. The powers to be. Diocesan Council, Parish Council, the priests, everybody. They're at the venue where the Divine Liturgy is going to be celebrated. The Catholicos is coming in. They've hired special cars, limos, police escort. The Catholicos is now going to come Sunday morning, and the place is packed. 2,000 to 3,000 people are inside. 1960. Where is that place? Right across from USC. It's called the Shrine Auditorium. The Catholicos gets there. He takes one look at the Shrine Auditorium. He sees the star and crescent on the top. Now here's a guy who, his people had been massacred under that sign. His people had seen genocide under that sign. He looked up at it and he says, I'm not celebrating the Divine Liturgy here when my church is empty. And talk about leadership. This is leader, okay? This is leader. Because he had everybody move the liturgy. And the LA Times records it. The LA Times talks about it in this article that happens to be inside of this booklet that my mom had preserved. So they move and they go over to St. James Armenian Church down on Adams. And he celebrates over there with a crowd of 200 people inside and outside. Well, let me read it, okay? This is from Times Religious Editor. The Patriarch of the Armenian Apostolic Church, His Holiness Vazgen I, called off a worship service in the Shrine Auditorium yesterday, just as it was about to begin, and adjourned the congregation of nearly 2,000 persons to St. James Armenian Church at 3200 West Adams Boulevard. Near pandemonium set in as clergymen, choir members, ushers, worshipers, and others scrambled to the new location. Traffic was jammed in all directions near the church. Cars were parked on the church lawn. Hundreds were left outdoors as the crowd squeezed into the church. They leaned from the second-story porch to glimpse the patriarch's procession into the sanctuary. Worshippers sweltered inside and were hardly able to move. Churchmen dashed in all directions, making hurried preparations for the service. Men ran with folding chairs from the nearby educational building. In an interview at the church, the patriarch denied that his sudden change in plans was due to the Shrine Auditorium's symbol, such as the crescent-shaped emblem with the star in the center atop the auditorium's dome, as had been reported earlier. Speaking through an interpreter, he said he had not been aware of the nature of the building in which the services had been scheduled before his arrival. I felt in my heart that I should celebrate the Divine Liturgy in our new church, that I should give my blessing from that church. Leadership, you know? Oh, yeah, there was a lot of people upset. There were a lot of planners, organizers, people with money who had said, wait, we gotta do it. No. He did it his way. This was the Catholicos that led our people. In 1982, when I was ordained, on the anniversary of his enthronement, and my ordaining bishop named me Vazgen after the Catholicos. As I read these stories today, I realize what a privilege that is, what an honor it is. I've always realized that, but today even more. What an honor and a privilege it is to bear the name of this Catholicos. Like I said, this book is very special. This evening, in a couple hours, we're going to be out there at the Western Diocese at the Humpar Room. Archbishop Hovnan Derderian has given us an opportunity to present this book to the public. It will be part of our collection at the Western Diocese in the museum. And like I said, I've digitized it, and I'll be happy to send you a copy, a link to where you can download it. It's a rather large file because it's made up of all kinds of pictures. So, you do need to download it. Just drop me a line at feedback@epostle.net, and I'll be happy to send you a link. Let's take a break, okay? Here's Susie to tell you what we're doing, and I'll be back in just a couple moments, okay?
Susie here again. Before continuing with today's broadcast, I'd like to take this opportunity to remind you that this podcast is made possible through your prayers and generous donations. Since 2008, we have been providing quality programming through podcasts, educational videos, and streams, using technology's most current resources. The message of Armenian Orthodoxy is giving people an intelligent and practical answer to many of life's difficulties, including the challenge to bring peace to a hurting world. To become part of this dynamic ministry, please take a moment now to visit inhisshoes.org website and press on the donate button. Your encouragement goes a long way. Please accept our heartfelt appreciation. Thanks for listening, and God bless. We now return to this week's Next Step with Father Vazgen.
Thank you, Susie, for that announcement, and thank you for all of your prayers, your wishes, and your questions. Oh, I know, I got a bunch of questions about last week. What was so special about that recording? Where were we doing that recording from? Well, let me tell you this, okay? I couldn't share it with you last week, but we were on the road. We were going from Utah. We went up to Yellowstone. We were stuck in a place called Rexburg, Idaho. We were in Idaho, and we were stuck in the sense that we got to the hotel and our reservation wasn't there. Actually, it was there. The room wasn't there. That's what was the problem. And so I had made those reservations through Expedia. I called Expedia. They were very, very nice, and they said, we'll take care of it. We'll get you another room. And so within 10, 15, 20 minutes, I think it was tops, they had a new room. They said, go back to the front desk and ask for a room. And I said, but they just told me that they don't ever. No, they said, go over there and ask. So we went up to the front desk. And the guy says, yeah, he says, we fixed it. We worked it out. You got a room. He says, it is a little dark, though. Now, this is Thursday night. I had to get the podcast out. And if you remember last week, I told you we had a few technical difficulties because I was running on low batteries. And we had just come through Yellowstone. And the podcast was coming out. Susie was waiting in Los Angeles. We had Ken had to tweak the file, then send it over to Susie. So it was I had put out the schedule in my head of where we had to be, and now there's no room in which we're going to record. So the guy at the front desk says, yeah, we got a room for you, but he says, it's a little dark. And what's that supposed to mean? I said, what do you mean it's a little dark? He says, it's just dark. I says, well, is there electricity? He says, oh, yeah. I said, is there internet? And he laughed. He says, of course, yeah. So, you know, those two things are necessary if you're going to put out a podcast. So we go to the room, and it's a medieval room, okay? The decor is a medieval times room. It's got, like, armor in there, like, you know, the man in the armor suit. He's standing there in the room. It's spooky. And it was dark. Immediately we went and turned on all the lights, and it was decorated in medieval times. It was wild. And so as I was recording, I had to record in that room. I didn't want to get into the details because I didn't know if I'd start laughing. But it was cool. It was really, really cool. And at the end of it all, it was just a fantastic time to be up there. After that, we went into Salt Lake City. We met with the people there at Salt Lake City. Sunday morning, we had the great blessings in conjunction with the service of the Assumption of Saint Mary. Wonderful, wonderful people had come from throughout the state of Utah. I think there was one or two from Idaho, but I think all of them were from Utah. Most of them were from Utah. We just had a wonderful, wonderful time, and we headed back the next day. This coming Sunday, I'm going to be at St. Gotobed's Church in the desert. If you're out that way, please do stop by and say hello. I want to thank you again for all of your well wishes and wish you all the best. You can get in touch with us at all the usual locations and drop me a line at feedback@epostle.net. Epostle is apostle, apostle with an E. E for electronic and expending. We are an electronic ministry for an expanding universe. With that, I want to thank you for joining us today. I hope you enjoyed today's show as much as we enjoyed producing it for you. On behalf of our producer, Susie, Ken, our engineer, this is Father Boskin, inviting you to join us again next week when I will tell you how it went tonight, and we will take the next step.
And now here's the fine print.
The information and comments presented within this podcast and our website do not necessarily represent the views of the Armenian Church hierarchy, but are presented as a challenge to define the dynamics of Armenian Orthodoxy in all aspects of life. Listening to these shows is habit-forming. Addictive behavior associated with the next step is rarely, if ever, remedied. Rather, the next step is known to relieve and cure common cases of narrow-mindedness, prejudice, numbskulledness, and glaucoma in patients over the age of 20. Results may vary depending on credit rating. Findings are based on double-blind studies conducted in Istanbul and Jerusalem. Side effects include mind expansion, clarity of focus, higher rates of heart palpitations, sensitivity to the pain of others, and occasional nausea. The management and production crew of epostle.net take full responsibility for changes you will experience. Not valid with any other offer.
Off, but I'm top, there's it.